The following program has been brought to you by Cain Vineyard and Winery. Cain Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cain5.com.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, with my co-host, Andrew, my son, Newman.
Afternoon.
Hi. And my producer and engineer, the infamous Jack Inslee. No comment.
My mic.
Jack, we can't hear Jack today. Okay. Apparently Jack's mic is
Hold out. On.
Oh, there it is.
There we go.
Thank God.
Jack, see?
What would we do without Jack?
I don't know.
Today's show is Foreclosure Talk. We want to let you know that we broadcast every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. And if you can't listen live, you can get any show through a free podcast, or all shows are archived on the webpage. We'd love to hear from you during the show. We'd like to hear your comments and questions and your criticisms. Call us at
718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128.
I'm impressed.
You like that, huh, Jack? I got it down pat now.
He's got those.
Very good.
He's got those digits down. Or you can always info@heritageradionetwork.com. Email us. Talk to us. Let us know what's going on. Okay, today's show.
It's the first time I've seen you since the end of tax season. How did it go for you?
I'm okay.
You're all right? You're a little tired still? Still tuckered out?
No.
Tuckered?
No.
I like the word tuckered.
All right, let's talk about foreclosures. You know,
I want to make sure you're okay. Can we get a little personal here?
I'm not
That's
okay.
The first time I've seen you.
I'm not okay.
Is that a song? Is that a song?
I'm not at liberty to discuss it.
I think it's a song. Can we play that song for you?
Can we talk about money today?
Well, all we do is talk about money. I'm trying to get to know you, Flash. I haven't seen you. You didn't call me for Easter.
Easter.
You called me at 3:30 when dinner started at 3. What's that about?
I'm not even.
What's that about? You never told me what time dinner was happening.
So you decided not to just.
What am I going to just show up? No, I don't know where you are.
What about calling and say, Ma, what time
I got to call you to find out what time you're having dinner?
All right.
Jack, you got to lower my mic. I'm going to get angry today. It's going to be ugly in here.
Let's talk about foreclosures, okay? I have a lot to say about foreclosures and short sales. Do you know the difference between the two terms?
Yes, we've discussed that on the show.
Short sales and foreclosures. Yes. What is the difference?
I don't remember. I've heard them.
Not
You've
a very
mentioned
good
them.
Student, are you?
I have a lot of things on my mind.
Oh, boy. Well, let me just tell you. The first thing is mortgage rates are still historically low, less than 5%. Get them in the fours. So opportunities are out there. And I have told a lot of people through the few years that this crash has been going on to stay away from foreclosures and short sales because they're really tough waters to navigate.
What is the difference?
I'm going to tell you. Oh. But let me just finish my thought here. But now I'm saying the foreclosures and the short sales make up a large percentage of the real estate deals these days. And they're not as dangerous as they started out to because there's a lot of regulations going on. The difference between a foreclosure and a short sale, to start it off with, foreclosure is the person who owns the home has already lost ownership and the bank has taken it back. A short sale is the person is delinquent on their mortgage. The bank is in the process of having to take the house back, and the owner is trying to sell it at whatever value they could get for it, and before it goes into foreclosure. Got it? So the owner didn't give up the ownership yet. And the banks really would prefer to do a short sale because it's cheaper than to do a foreclosure. Foreclosure, there's all these legal costs involved. But let me just go through the process now. If you have a lot of, energy to do it, because it's going to be a winding long path. All right,
to purchase,
to find one and to buy one. So a short sale, as I said, the lender must agree to accept less than what's owed on the property, which is very common these days. It's called upside down, underwater. So if you see a house with $300,000, the owner may owe $350,000 on it. The bank has to approve accepting $300,000 because they're going to eat that $50,000 loss. So that's what a short sale is. And it often happens with buying properties that have stories, sometimes pretty tough stories And negotiations drag on for months and months and months. The banks are, you know, really drag their feet on these deals because they have to answer to a lot of people and get approval. And it's not for the faint of heart.
So short sales tougher than a foreclosed?
Probably. Probably because there's probably more layers involved.
Okay.
All right. During a short sale, while you're waiting, if you locate a property and you start to do the paperwork, and it really takes a long time. I mean, 10 months is not unusual for it to take place. Squatters move into the house sometimes.
Oh, the people who are living there aren't there still?
No, oftentimes they've moved on. Yes. And so they can't afford to maintain the property, stay in the property, or they might have gotten divorced or had a job transfer or all sorts of reasons, and they're not in the house. Sometimes they're in the house, but often they're not in the house, so squatters move in. And sometimes when they leave the house, you know, they destroy the property. They could rip out the dishwashers, they can rip up the rugs, they can take out the copper piping. I mean, they do some crazy stuff to their houses because they're angry.
Hey, Jack, you hear this? This is an option for you, buddy. Squatting.
Squat.
Jump on, man, that, buddy.
Jeez.
We get a list of foreclosures or short sales, and we can, you know, you can move week to week.
All right. Many of the properties that you buy in foreclosure or short sales are distressed properties. There are things wrong with them. Okay. If they were perfect properties, chances are they might have been sold before they got to the foreclosure and the short sale positions. So, but not all. Some of them are okay. Some people just overextend themselves and borrowed more than the house was worth after the drop off in the values. Okay. So Florida and California are one of the worst hit places, and there's lots of properties for sale out in those places. And then they're in the ordinary places. They're in Minnesota. They're available in Oregon. They're available in New Jersey. They're all over the country. About a third of the sales that go on these days are distressed properties, foreclosed and short sales. That's a major part of the real estate market these days. So that's why I say it may be time to test these waters for those people, okay? Distressed homes are going to be on the market for years. There are over a million foreclosed properties on the market right now. Another 500,000 in short sales, probably short sales. And then there's another 1.5 million properties likely to become short sales or foreclosures in the next year.
Wait, you're telling me it takes 10 months to purchase one of these?
It could take up towards that, yes.
That's a long time to say you're buying a house.
Yeah, that's why the process is for the people who have the ability to stick with it and hang in there and, you know, navigate rough waters. It's not for everybody. It's very stressful, very, very stressful.
Seems very tedious.
It's stressful.
Bargain hunters.
That's
right. Okay. You're often dealing with negotiating with multiple third parties. That's why this goes.
Who are the third parties?
Well, it could be it's obviously the bank. It could be lots of times the banks don't actually own them because they securitized those loans. That's what caused the bust. And so investors own those properties. And so they all have their standards. And then there's the governments are involved with the programs of helping these people do the short sales. So each one of these agencies and individuals or companies have their own levels of compliance and things that the levels that they can sell things at and requirements that they have to comply with. So there's a lot of different parties involved. That's what makes the process so long. A foreclosure is a little less because it's pretty much the bank owns the property and the bank wants to get it off the books. But short sales oftentimes have a whole different amount of people involved or agencies or organizations. All right. New laws and government relief programs are helping speed up the deals, and they can cut out a few months out of the process. The buyer has to be twice as diligent, they say, okay? Because you're going to be in it, and you're going to have some ups and downs and ups and downs. So why go through all this hassle? Well, Jack said it a few minutes ago, because you'll get a deal. You could get a deal. You get a home you love, and you'll get it at a lower price than comparable properties.
Yeah, but how much is your time worth? That's the question.
Well, you know, sometimes if you're in a position where you have to get something within a period of time, like you're in a lease and you got to get out of a lease, or your kid's got to start school or something, that's not for you. But for people who can afford to work the process and hang in there, it could work. So the first thing you do when you find a property like is bid low, but don't bid too low. And the reason is these properties, if the bank owns them, are priced pretty much at the price that they think that they're going to get for the property. So they've done their market research, and they know if they're listing a house for $250,000, it's going to come close to $250,000. They're not putting it up for $250,000, and it's really only worth $140,000. So don't bid too low. The same thing with a short sale. The short sale, you know, if you come in and the guy owes $350,000, as I said, and you come in and offer $250,000, I don't think the bank's going to go $100,000 off. It depends, of course, what's going on around the community and the other properties involved in the real estate market at that point. You think you can drive a hard bargain, but it's not. There's not a lot of wiggle room. They're looking to get these properties off their books. They're looking to sell them property, so they priced them pretty well. A lot of these properties are going to investors now. Investors are seeing that these are good deals, and these investors often don't have to go for mortgages. They have cash. They buy these houses straight out cash. So the banks are very open to an all-cash deal, because it's going to be a lot easier for them to go through the process, because they don't have to wait for you to get a mortgage and you qualify and the appraisal has to come in and everything. When you have an all-cash deal, you can bypass all those things. So the banks like those investors, and they're going to be preferable. The bank also... That's the wrong thing. So what are the other things? We got to be careful to make sure that what you're buying, you can qualify for. And so the appraisal's got to come in. So you better make sure that you get your property inspected. Make sure that the inspection is, you know, if it's going to cost $8,000 to fix the damages, make sure that that's going to be included in the cost when you put in your bid. Because if you don't have the money and the appraisal doesn't come in, the bank's not going to even give you a house that doesn't have a working dishwasher and the plumbing is pulled out of the walls. So you got to have the money to pay that, have the inspector lay out everything that's wrong with the house. The bank doesn't want to get involved in another bad loan. So they're going to make sure that you have the ability to pay and you're buying a house that has the ability to function as a real home. They've been ripped off a lot. And that was their fault. They were sleeping at the wheel, and they're now going to the other side of the spectrum, and they're inspecting and making sure that every I is dotted and all T's are crossed. The market out there is
where is this market?
Well, the hottest markets right now are in California. Okay. California really took a beating on the crash. And now they're recovering. And the reason why California is recovering is because there are jobs there. People are moving there, and people need to live there, and people work there. The markets that aren't recovering that took a serious crash are Florida. Florida is down in the dumps. There are not enough jobs to have people move in there. It's mostly a retirement community, a vacation community. So people are not rushing in to buy those houses down there. And also places like Arizona, which is a retirement community, and Las Vegas, which became a retirement community, lots of sunshine. Well, there's not enough jobs to support an influx of people to come in and buy those vacant houses. So and like I said, they're all over the place. They're in New Jersey. They're in Minnesota. They're in Oregon. They're every state in the union. They're all across the country. But
are any of them here?
Well, of course there are. Well, you know, they're not going to be the most desirable properties on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan.
Why is that?
But they might be in parts of Queens. They might be in parts of Brooklyn. They're in Staten Island and the Bronx. They're there. They're there, but you know, you gotta work it. It takes a bit of work. Make sure you work with a realtor that knows the short sale market and the foreclosure market, because it's a different breed of animal than the normal buy and sell on an average property. So it's out there. You know, when you're ready to make a deal, make sure you find a bank that's willing to work with a foreclosed or short sale.
Is that harder?
There's so much out there now that the banks are now working with these properties much more than they were originally.
Okay.
You know, originally when this market crashed, banks didn't do any deals, and only the perfect deals went through. But now that it's been almost three years, and the government has put into place these programs to help these people either save their houses or the FHA mortgages out there, the government's backing those out. So the government's doing their work.
FHA?
Yeah, Fair Housing Administration.
I'm sorry. I didn't know I was supposed to know these acronyms. Okay. What does this look like? Am I like an acronym dictionary?
Okay. Well, FHA is a Fair Housing Administration. So they're a government agency that supports mortgages and banks. I mean, homes. So that's kind of the whole foreclosure short sale thing, the market. Don't be afraid to go out there and look. Just start a research, investigating. It may be worth your while. Your time may be worth the deal.
You feel better now? Like you got a little of this information out there. You're getting into the show. You're having a little fun today. Feeling better?
Well, when I get on the show, I always like being
here. I'm glad your energy's up. You see what happens when you positive all right, attitude.
Let's take a minute here and get back to us later.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting-edge under 40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. See, there's another Fleming.
I was just going to talk about my paisan. I don't know
paisan?
This guy.
Paisan? I don't think Fleming's an Italian.
Well,
name.
I'm Italian on the other side, so I have paisans.
You're barely Italian, and all of a sudden you got paisans.
I think that we're taking over the Heritage Radio Network, the Flemings. It's going to become a dynasty.
You are such a freaking dork. I'm so glad you're happy. Look at that smile on your face. I wish everyone could see the crap-eating grin you have on your face right now.
Do we have any email questions today, Jack?
I got a letter in the mail here with chicken scratch, but I'm going to try to read it. We'll see. It says, my employer received a letter from the tax department to garnish my wages. He says, I did pay the tax bill. What do I tell my boss?
Okay, well, that's a good question, because that comes up only sometimes. Garnishing your wages is very embarrassing for most employees. They don't want their bosses to know that they have tax problems. So in this case, the garnish came in and the guy paid his tax bill, and now he's not required to have his wages garnished, but the employer has to comply with the law.
What does the guy do?
Well, he needs to talk to his boss, and he has to tell his boss, first of all, I did pay the taxes, and if the boss wants to see proof, he can show proof that he did make a payment.
Well, shouldn't he have to get
a letter or something? Well, wait, let me just finish. So, the boss is still required to comply with the tax department. So, what the employee has to do is contact the tax department to get a satisfaction of judgment, and provide a copy of that to the employer. The employer will be off the hook. And if the employer, it takes time, that satisfaction judgment will take a few weeks to get there. If the employer decides that he has to comply and withhold it from his wages, the employee can get that money back. He will get a refund. It's just a longer process.
Sounds like the employee needs a raise.
Sounds like the employee needs to keep his taxes out of his job.
What?
Well, he needs to keep his taxes
out of his job?
Keep his tax problems out of the job. I'm sorry. Don't get into tax problems. There you go. How's that answer?
Well, you never know. Different situations.
But, you know, when you get a garnisher, you've been well into the tax process.
I guess.
The collection process. Yeah. All right?
So next question is coming in from Frank. And it's actually addressed to Flash and Andrew.
Yeah, of course.
First says, I want to thank you for taking the time and doing the show. We need more people like you educating the rest of us on financial matters. Couldn't agree more. Says he was revisiting episode 30, How Do You Mind Your Money, and realized your cultural descriptions of attitudes towards money describes my situation pretty well. As the youngest child in a Latino family, it became my responsibility to take care of my elderly parents. I'm 24 and I have a stable job. My parents are retired now, but were not able to save a significant amount during their working years. I live with my parents and use my income to cover 75% of their living expenses. Wow. Includes mortgage payments, food, utilities, and some medical expenses. The rest comes from my father's pension. I want to get a sense of the financial and tax implications of my situation. I was wondering if I can deduct any of the expenses on my taxes next year. Can your parents become your dependents? Thank God for... thank you both for taking the time to address
We're not
the questions.
God. We're not God yet.
Keep up the good work, Frank.
Wow, that was a long question.
Yeah.
I first want to start with, I think Andrew was yelling at me when I was saying how Latino families have a cultural thing and Chinese families. And do you remember that discussion, Drew?
No, I wasn't here for episode 30. Yeah.
Andrew also said just let the old people, you know,
die.
Pass on.
Let them just let them starve to death.
Yeah.
All right, Frank, the answer
really?
Is
why is everyone picking on me today?
Well, you go on about it.
I disagreed.
Frank can pick up his parents as his dependents if he is supports more than 50% of their financial need. He can pick them up as dependents as long as they're not filing.
But what about the father has a pension, he said?
Well, the father's pension may not be enough for him to qualify to file. When you're over 65, and it's a married couple, without counting the Social Security, I don't think they have to file until after they reach like $18,000, $19,000. So Frank needs to just examine how much he actually supports them, you know, financially, and determine if he's eligible to deduct them, do a little financial calculation as to if they didn't... if they didn't deduct themselves and blah, blah, blah. So he just needs a good accountant to do some quick calculations to determine that. But chances are he's going to be eligible to deduct his parents as their dependents.
What a good kid he is, huh? 24?
Yeah. Now, the bad thing is he pays a good part of the mortgage, but he can't deduct the mortgage because the mortgage is not in his name. So if the parents wanted to put him on the mortgage and he pays the mortgage, he can get a mortgage deduction. He's living in that house. That could happen,
too. Wouldn't that be more beneficial for his parents to write that off against their...
Well, not if they're not filing.
Well, wouldn't you then file, get all of the money?
Well, if you don't have enough income, having deductions is useless. So they may not even benefit by the deduction of the mortgage interest or the real estate taxes.
So you have to change the mortgage interest.
So Frank needs a quick conversation with an accountant to determine the financial picture. It may be worth his while because I've done that for people, particularly older parents, and all of a sudden the kids are taking their parents as their dependents, and it's a nice little refund in their pocket. Thanks, Frank. Keep listening.
Good luck, Frank.
All right, I have a little number nuts today.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
It's been too long.
Oh, well, number nuts is back. And this is an interesting number nuts. It's not exactly a number. You're going to give me what you think, how the economy affects certain trends.
You know, Andrew, you probably agree with me here. Number nuts doesn't really seem to have much of a format, does it?
Not at all. It's all over the place. It's just like Andrew versus the law. She just likes to read stories, and she's like, Andrew, what do you think?
All right, watch this. But Jack, there's a specialty one in here for you. We'll start with, there's only a few, so let's see how smart you guys are. Some of them are pretty common sense. Some of them,
Wait, what am I doing here?
You're going to tell me. I'm going to ask you something. When hemlines go up and down, what does that indicate regarding the economy? Is the economy going positive or negative?
Negative.
What does that mean? When hemlines go up or down? Was that
the economy is going down?
Right. Wait,
women are hiking up their skirts.
No, wait. When the skirts go up, when the skirts go up, what does that mean?
Women are desperate. They need money.
Yeah, economy's going down.
When the skirts go up, the hemlines go up. Economy's down.
Yes.
The hemlines go down, the economy is.
That's right.
Up.
I guess so.
No, you guys got it backwards.
Have you seen the skirts? These girls are that's crap.
The longer the skirts.
What age range are we talking?
I know, really. What are we, like 55-year-olds?
No, young girls. Because all girls.
You should see the skirts people are wearing. They're just shirts. This is crap. Next question.
No. The longer the skirts. I'm not
keep
finished.
Going. I don't care what you're going to say. It's over. That's bullshit.
The longer the skirts.
Bleep that, Jack.
The longer the skirts, the less confidence they have in the economy. Okay? All right, that's number one.
I'm glad someone's decided that. I think it's the exact
opposite. Well, it's true. It's true.
Oh, why? Because some news article organization told you.
Listen, I've been around a while. I've seen skirts go up and down.
So in the 70s, how long were the skirts?
No, they were very short, and the economy was in the dumper.
That's what me and Jack said.
But in the early 70s, the economy went in the dumper in the middle to late 70s, but long skirts got longer. Hot pants were hot in 1970.
Oh my God, she has no idea what she's talking about.
I believe I was there, I remember. Okay, here's the January effect. In January, markets go up. Is that, I'm sorry, What does that mean?
Markets go up in January.
No.
Nice.
Score one for us, Jack.
We win.
This is an easy one.
The last one's pretty easy, too.
No, this is an easy one. Pallets and cardboard boxes. What do they indicate?
I don't know what that means.
Pallets and cardboard boxes. When the sales of pallets and cardboard boxes go up.
Oh, the economy's doing well.
There you go. Yeah, and Alan Greenspan used to use that as one of his measurement tools all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good story right there.
All right.
Are we almost done? Lipstick. This is just retarded.
Lipstick. When lipstick sales increase, what does that indicate in the economy?
I think the economy's going up.
I'm going down because the girls are getting whorish again.
They're getting what? Oh, Drew. Well, you're both wrong.
It's staying the same?
Well.
This is crap. No. This is over, Jack.
Give me that. No, there's a good one there.
Jack, just play the good, the bad, and the ugly song,
no,
Jack.
No, it's not ready. Give me that back. No, the deal is, the reason is this. Jack, you're wrong because when lipstick sales increase, the economy is in the dumper.
That's what I said. How was I wrong?
You said because they're whorish, and that's
they're
disgusting.
Looking for money.
That's not true.
Why does it go up?
Because luxury, they can't afford luxuries anymore, and they buy lips. They're more cosmetics because that's a cheap form of making themselves feel good.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That is retarded.
No, it's not.
Jack, just play the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I got this one's for Jack. This one's for Jack.
Nice.
Okay. Beets.
Can you read it?
Wait. Beets.
Beets are good vegetable.
Beets in songs, okay?
Okay.
Songs with high beat variants, that's individual tracks that shift tempos throughout the song, are preferred in times when markets are high or low.
You're saying the tempo changes?
Yep.
So you need faster music.
High individual tracks that shift tempo throughout the song. Or the reverse of that is when the beats are
I think in a bad economy the beat stays the same. That's my answer.
I'm going with Jack.
When the volatility is high, people tend to prefer songs that have a more consistent beat.
Right.
And when
Is that what we said, Jack? Yeah, Jack.
He found that when songs that have a high beat variance, individuals prefer them in market volatility.
What about this beat?
There it is, Jack. Going out on the top. That'll avoid Jack.
I think that's a low beat. Oh, by the
that
way,
was the worst number nuts
I
ever.
I saw
that. That was the worst number nuts ever. I'm glad there were only five questions.
This movie was on last week.
Whoa.
And I didn't watch it, but Ray was watching it, and I heard this theme.
Who's Ray?
Ray's my boyfriend.
There you go.
They were playing it throughout the entire movie, and I giggled every time I heard it.
That was good. That was a good story. I was watching Imus this morning. He has like six dudes on his show.
Is
scary looking.
Should we get more dudes on my show?
No, but he is scary looking, that guy.
He's a weird looking guy.
You seen him lately, man?
Who won number nuts?
You did, Jack.
Well, Andrew got frustrated. Well, who's going to die this week? Who should we just let... We should let people who...
Who die? What?
Who don't care.
Why does everyone have to die?
He's getting out of hand.
This is out of control. Let's just close the show. We'll be a little bit short this week.
We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. In 2010, EscapeMaker.com won an Emmy Award for their agritourism webisode, so this year they thought, why not bring agritourism and green getaway ideas right to you? Come to the Green Getaway's Local Food and Travel Expo on April 30th at One Hanson Place, home of the Brooklyn Flea and former Williamsburg Savings Bank. Presented by Amtrak, Zipcar, and I Love New York, the carbon-free event will be a day filled with food, prizes, workshops, and kids' activities. Over 50 getaway destinations, from counties to local farms and bed and breakfasts within a day's drive or train ride of New York City, will be exhibiting on the main floor and in the huge bank vault downstairs. See what's hot in sustainable travel and receive special show-only discounts. Grow NYC will be doing workshops on the Green Market, and Appalachian Mountain Club will offer workshops on adventure bicycling and hiking via mass transit. EscapeMaker.com will be giving away over 50 getaway prizes, ranging from zipline adventure passes to an overnight stay at Mohonk Mountain House. Travel greener, eat local. Come to the expo on April 30th. Get your tickets now at www.escapemaker.com. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.